This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Hey, hi, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Aspiring Adult Podcast. This is your host, Sarah Smiles, and on this week's episode, we have a special guest, Libby, or more widely known on social media as Libby Beyond the Label. Libby is a financial guru slash expert on personal finance, and you might have seen her journey about paying off her car debt or her new journey about making her house or converting her house into an Airbnb. She also talks in this episode about growing her following to over 200,000 followers while working a 9-to-5 job, and advice on content creating, how to grow your account, or how she's been able to grow her account. She gives a lot of tips and tricks of what's worked for her and what hasn't, and she also shares her entrepreneurial journey starting way back in college when she started a sticker business when she wasn't even willing to show her face on social media. Now you'll see her beautiful smiling face in every single one of her videos telling you about personal finance, how it can be gamified, and why it's interesting. So welcome Libby to AA.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. I was just thinking that I called you Little Miss Finance when I guess you're Little Miss Misses.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
That is crazy. And then I was also thinking about when was the last time I talked to Libby, and I was remembering our sim sessions when I was in San Diego. Do you remember those?
Oh my gosh, yes. And then we were like, there's so many things that already exist that are like this.
Yeah, yeah. That's so funny. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm just peachy. I moved to Denver for, I don't know, this is probably my third move this, I don't know, past 365 days. So it's crazy. But
are you still on overall, the ranch?
What's that?
Are you still on the ranch?
No, I left the ranch. Yeah. So being on the ranch was awesome for sure. Definitely what I needed to kind of jumpstart what I wanted to do with my life. And that sounds really weird because it's not like I want to be ranching for the rest of my life. I mean, I do. It'd be nice to have a homestead, but I wanted to take a break from corporate, wanted to step away because I was getting super wrapped up in my 9-to-5 and just wanted to do something different. And so being on the ranch was awesome. You did so much stuff outside. You were around horses every single day. You were around really cool people every single day, but it didn't pay really well, and so it made it really difficult to go and see friends or family or do any sort of traveling, especially because I was living in a ski town too, so it's really expensive to fly in and out of. But yeah, it was a good experience, and I now know what I want to do with my life and how I want to take my work-life balance. And so that was definitely a good reframing structure for me. But now I'm back in, I guess, a city. I'm in a suburb of Denver. Okay. And am working back in engineering. So,
oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So crazy, crazy money moves over here, I guess.
Gosh.
Yeah. But anyways, welcome on to the show. I realize this is the first time I had you on. This is... I had Lexi on to talk about your engineering podcast, which we'll get into that in a second.
You want but me to this? Is this helpful?
If you want to, yeah.
Okay. I'm like, oh, busting out the old equipment.
That's so... I was honestly, I was writing out the script for this podcast, and I was like, Wow, Libby has lived like so many different internet lives.
Oh.
I was like, wow, okay. It's damn.
I'm just like, let's just keep changing it up.
I rebrand the podcast, I think, every single year. So you're good. That's I'm on that same wavelength.
Okay. I have my headphones right next to me too.
Okay.
Then hopefully these things don't die on us. I've had them charging.
Wow, you look so professional.
I used to use these at work all the time.
Are they the Bose ones?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the ones I have. And I feel like the battery life used to be really, really good on them. And now...
Now they're not. Yeah. Are you getting a lot of echo? Is it bad if I don't have headphones?
I don't hear any echo. Well, do you hear an echo?
I don't.
Okay, cool. Then we're good. It was a good idea in theory.
You know, we tried.
Exactly. Well, welcome to AA. I'm so excited to have you.
Thank you for having me. I haven't been on a podcast in like over a year.
That's crazy. Well, I remember I was like looking through your TikTok and Instagram feed, and I scrolled down really far to where you had an interview with someone that was talking to you about figure skating and about like influencing and engineering. Was that the last podcast you were on?
I think so.
That's so funny. What was that for?
I don't even know. Usually I try, if people like ask me to be on podcasts, I try to be on whatever people need me to do. Like whether it's a podcast or sometimes mm-hmm. I'll get people to reach out to me via email to like show up to their SWE, like virtually mm-hmm. come in for their SWE chapter.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Like different college things. Anytime someone asks me to do something, I always try to do it because I remember like, or just even in like your current life, it's always kind of scary to reach out to people. So I'm like, mm-hmm. I want to say yes to everybody.
I love that. And so I've also been like, obviously you post so much and it's so like, I get anxiety because I'm like, wow, how can Libby post this much? And I'm not like, how does she do this? This is crazy. And then I see like your day in the life video and it's like 5 a.m. to 6 a.m. make yeah. content. I'm like, oh, and that's how she does it.
I'm just a robot over here. Let's be honest. No, it's exhausting. But I've been trying to push myself because mm-hmm. we are moving to the city where I work yeah. at the end of this month. So I'm like, okay, let's just push through because right now I have an hour commute. And mm-hmm. once we get to the city, I'm going to be walking to work. Like that's how close that's we are so to where nice. I work. So I'm like, I'm going to have so much time in my day to like do mm-hmm. all this stuff. I just got to push through.
That's wild. Yeah. I was seeing that you were putting your house on Airbnb so that way you can rent in the city.
Yeah. Oh,
that's,
yeah.
That's awesome. How did you get the idea to do that?
Honestly, we have no idea what we're doing. I'll just like, we have no idea what we're doing. But you know what? When we bought this house originally, we bought it in 2021 and we live in a vacation area in Wisconsin. We had lived here our whole lives, but we always bought this house with the intention that it would one day turn into an Airbnb because like, let's be real. We want to build a big house one day when we're like yep. rich, and, like ready to
oh,
start.
I get that.
No, we want to do that. So we knew that like this would never be our forever home. Mm-hmm. So we just, I feel like we have an idea in our heads with something, my husband and I, and then we just do it. Like it's kind of impulsive in a way, but like in a good way. Like when we first moved into our very first apartment, I feel like I had the idea one day and the next day was applying to apartments and the next day got accepted and we're like, oh, I guess we're moving now. Kind of the same thing happened with this where one day I was like, nope, all right, let's make the change. We toured apartments, we found one, and then we're like, okay, I guess we're renting this house on Airbnb now. So we're like, I'm trying to learn all the things. I feel like I do that with everything. I'm like, I just need to like learn everything. I want to figure it all out. And we're going to just see what happens. It's like a new adventure.
I feel like that's the engineering method, like trial by failure, trial by effort. Like you do and you reiterate until something clicks and you get it right. Yeah. And like you just go all in on an idea. And if it doesn't work, you iterate on it until it does.
Well, yeah. And it's so funny because I'm like, all right, this is our WBS. This is our costed bomb for the move. This is our schedule for move-in day.
You're saying that you have like no information about how to do things, but I feel like being an engineer gives you so much insight and gives you so much background on how to effectively navigate a project, problem solve. And it gives you so much more of at least a head start than people that are like, I actually have no idea what I'm doing.
Yes. And it's so funny because one of my coworkers, because I've been talking about this in the office, and one of my coworkers the other day was like, how are you going about figuring out what to do? And I think another piece of engineering that sometimes like the stereotypical engineer might struggle with is networking and like the personable side of things. So that's something that I feel like I strive in. Like that's one of my strengths. And so as soon as we figured out we were going to do this, I just started reaching out to people and like talking about it. Like I was getting my hair done and I was telling my hairdresser and she was like, oh, like I know this one girl who actually does that in our area. Like I can connect you. She connected us. And then I reached out and I was like, hey, like not looking for you to tell me exactly how to do it, but like more so just would love to learn about your experience and like hear about your horror stories, hear about your success stories. Like, would you want to grab coffee? And then like started talking to her and she like gave us all this information of what to do. And I feel like all of a sudden all these other people in our lives have been like popping up that like have Airbnbs. So it's like once you start putting things into action, like telling people you're doing something, all of a sudden all like everybody in your network is like, oh, I have all these people you can reach out to.
Yeah. My dad makes fun of me all the time for this because I do the same thing. I'm like, I'm simultaneously like trying to manifest while also trying to convince myself that this is what I am going to do. Like, this is real for me.
Oh, yeah.
And so I have done that so many times. And my dad is like, you're the luckiest person. Everything just falls into your lap. I'm like, no, I just talk to people. Like, crazy concept. That's just what I do.
Right. And then I feel like as soon as you start saying that's what you're going to do, it's almost like, how do I explain this? Your mind is already made up. Like it's going to happen because you've already decided in your mind that it's going to happen. So like, even though we haven't listed this house on Airbnb, we don't have any of the permits, like none of that is done. I'm like, no, this is an Airbnb. We're new Airbnb hosts now.
Also, like, what do you, you can't just have people stay in your house and like pay you? Like, what's,
oh my god, it's crazy. So I thought it was such a simple process, and then this girl that I was telling you about that I got coffee with and everything, she said that when she started it with her brothers initially, like a couple years ago, and they just...
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news, there's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar plant protein bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter. Hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
It's like bought this house and it, they bought it furnished. And they like the next day, they were like, what do we do with this house? They put it on Airbnb. And then the police came to their house and they were like, you cannot be renting out without like all these permits and stuff. So what? She was like, definitely don't skip that step. There's like a state permit that we have to get. And then someone has to come out and inspect the house and like make sure it's safe. It's called like a home lodging permit or something. It's like the same thing that bed and breakfasts have to get to run your business. And then you have to get a county permit. And then you have to get a town permit. And like on top of all that, I'm like learning all this stuff about real estate and zoning and stuff. You have to check with your town and see like what zone your house is on, because depending on the zone you might not be able to turn it into a rental. Isn't that crazy?
That is wild. And that's especially wild because I feel like on social media you'll see all of these people that are promoting how to get passive income. This is what you need to do: buy this property, rent it, flip it, turn it into an Airbnb. And they're not telling people the stuff like you're, what you're saying. They're just like, yeah, it's super easy, everybody can do it. And then you're so here saying the police are going to show up at your door.
It's so much work and it is surprisingly so much money. Like I imagine it varies state to state, but like just for the state permit, it was $300 for the permit and $120 for the inspection. So that's $420 just for that permit. We still have to do county. We still have to do city. We still have to, oh, something that I'm sure those people on that you're talking about on social media never tell you about is like your homeowner's insurance. We've been talking to an insurance agent because we have to like change our policy to have it have more coverage. Like it's all these things that I'm just learning all about.
Yeah, that's wild. I would have never, I guess that makes sense. Like, I would hope that the people's houses that I'm staying at have to go like through some sort of process, and like they're not just gonna show up while I'm there and like kind of kidnap me. Like, that's always been my worst fear, is like I'm staying in someone else's home and this could very well go awry.
Gosh, I know. That's why, like, I've been loving talking about it on social media, because I've just been generally making videos asking the question, like, what has been your best experience? Because I've done a couple Airbnbs, but like, I feel like I'm not picky. I don't know. Like, I definitely worry about safety and stuff like that, but also I'm like, I'm usually going to a place to like do things, like see the sights, or like if it's a Airbnb with a pool, I'm there to like lay by the pool or like go to the beach. I usually am not as worried about my like home environment or my stay, but I know that like some people are. So I've been getting just like the most insightful recommendations that I never would have thought. Like, for example, someone said, make a little basket, like a welcome basket, with fill it with local, just like local goodies, like local coffee, local wine, local beer, and then make a little booklet of like things to do in the town. I'm like, oh, that's so cute. And like, knowing me, I'm like, I would have so much fun making a little binder. I'm like, I'm totally gonna do that. But I never would have thought to do that without asking people, like, hey, what do you like when you go stay at Airbnbs?
And honestly, there's been, so I'm currently living in a long-term Airbnb, which I found on Furnished Finders, which, if you've ever heard of that,
I
it's
haven't.
for travel nursing
Okay.
and it's for long-term stays. So Airbnb, if you are staying long-term somewhere, they typically have you pay all of the months up front. You don't
Dang, no
pay
way.
month to month.
Okay.
Yes. At least that's what I had found. And I was like, that's kind of steep. Like, especially the places that I'm looking at. Like, I don't want to stay. Like, I want to have my own place. I do not want to be connected to somebody else's house, yada, yada, yada. So I'm very picky in terms of like Airbnbs, like this apartment style complex thing. So I was looking around, and my brother used to major in nursing, super random, because now he's in sustainable engineering. And he had met a few girls that, when he was getting his internship in college, was recommending Furnish Finders, because all of the places are completely furnished and you can stay there long term. So I don't know what the permits are like for that, probably the same, but that is how I found this apartment.
Oh,
And
that's so cool.
it is, like, honestly, such a nice setup. And if you're looking for tenants, like, to not just rent out and be a landlord, like, it's kind of the same setup as Airbnb. You're staying for an extended period of time with the intention of leaving within a year.
Yeah,
And so
so
we.
that's so interesting. I think actually some people had recommended that I look into Furnish Finder when I was saying that we wanted to move to the city. But the reason we didn't do that is because we don't know like how long, like on Furnish Finder, can you extend your past a year if you're like, oh, I actually really like this place, can you keep living there?
So my boyfriend and I are actually asking our landlord if we can extend our stay, because my boyfriend is probably the most charismatic human you'll ever meet in your entire life. Everybody adores him and loves him. And so our landlord actually offered him a job in his like startup business. And so my boyfriend Milo is working for our landlord and is also working down the street at one of our neighbors' houses as like a contractor slash construction slash I don't know what else.
That's so cool.
But so we're asking to extend the stay because we're having such a positive experience, and I have a hard time believing he's gonna say no.
Oh yeah. That's so exciting though.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things where I am so transient in my life. I'm kind of like you, where I decide to do something and I commit to it 100%. My new thing is getting my MBA in Europe.
Oh my
So,
gosh. Oh my gosh, we need to talk about this because I have been obsessed with wanting to get my MBA also.
And I was on a girls' trip last week, and Emma, who did engineering with me, said that she was getting her master's at Miami. The classes are $3,000 per class. In Europe, the programs that I'm looking at to get your MBA, 6 grand a year.
Oh my God, that's way more affordable.
Yeah. So that's what I'm currently looking into, and I'm trying to manifest that into happening.
This is like
So,
an MBA hack
oh,
in
100%.
Europe.
100%. And like, you get to live in Europe. And one of my good friends who I met on the ranch, she is getting her master's in Europe right now.
Okay.
And she said that once you get your like student visa, you also get a social security number and you become a citizen.
Hey.
Mm-hmm. At least in
there, or would you do it virtually?
I would move there.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my so, God, I love that.
That's why I'm like all on board for furnished finders, all on board for a long-term Airbnb.
Wait, that's so cool. So the way that I'm thinking of doing my MBA is my company will sponsor it, and okay. you have to pay upfront for the class. But once you complete the class, and I think you need the minimum grade is like you have to get an A or a B for them to reimburse you, and then mm-hmm. they will reimburse you. And then I've talked to a couple people who have done it at my company, and they said like, yeah, you pretty much only have to worry about fronting the money for the first set of classes, because then whatever they reimburse you, you kind of like roll over into like the next classes.
Okay.
And then by the time you're done, like you get your final check from my company. And then the, I guess, like twist is you have to then stay there for 4 years, or you have to pay it back.
Oh.
Which I'm kind of like, I might need this to like motivate me to stay at my job.
Okay, but honestly, like if you did want to leave and you were leaving to go to your own, to like a different company or like somewhere else, you could leverage that and be like,
yes.
I will come work for your company if you pay off this debt
yes.
for this company.
Totally. And so I have been studying for the GMAT. I took it in December with like 3 weeks of studying.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what is so funny? And I feel even embarrassed to say this, but there's like an analytical section, a reading mm-hmm. section, and a math section. And I was like, engineer, I'm going to kill the math section. It's going to be so good. Reading, I'm a little nervous about. It was the opposite. I did better in reading and I did worse in the math. But you know what? The type of math on the GMAT is like all, you know, there's no numbers. It's all
like statistics.
Letters. It's like solving an equation, like solve for x.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Plus four, or not four, dx to the 7r, like all these exponents and like the exponent rules. It's all the calculus. It's all high school math. So I was like, I'm going to kill the math section. All that to say, I got like I got a 495 and I was shooting for a 600. So I'm like, I'm going to study again.
Slightly off.
We're going to study. I'm going to study, like actually study this time. Then maybe I'll take it again in the summer. But mm-hmm. I know there's like some GMAT or not GMAT, MBA programs you can apply to without needing to take the GMAT. But the one that I have my eyes set on is Kellogg Northwestern in Chicago.
Okay, yep.
And they require a 3.0 or above for college GPA. I don't have an undergraduate GPA of 3.0 or above. So if you don't mm-hmm. have that, you need a GMAT score of 600 or above. So I'm like, I just want to be able to say that I've gotten into that school for some, like, it's like a family thing. All my grandparents went there and my mom went there. So I'm like, I want to say that I have gotten into that school. And then not go. Do all this work just to be like, I did it too.
Yeah, honestly, like, I think engineering GPA should be weighted differently. Like, they should be taken into consideration a little differently.
I know. I got a 2.8 and like, I didn't put my GPA on any of my job applications. And mm-hmm. honestly, none of my jobs ever asked for my GPA. And I knew, like, I think I knew that I would never have like a good engineering GPA my sophomore year of college. So my strategy was like, I need to get a ton of work experience. So mm-hmm. like I took a semester off to do, what are they called? A co-op program. I did like mm-hmm. a co-op program for a semester. And then I had like 2 internships in the summer. And so I just like really heavily focused on that work experience in the interviews mm-hmm. and stuff and in my application. And I was just like, fingers crossed, nobody asked me for my GPA. And no one ever did. And now I work in a great engineering company.
And that's what's funny to me. Like, everyone talks about GPA and how it's important and how you need to put it on your resume. Like, the only reason that I had a 3.0 in college was because of COVID. And, like, stuff went online and it became a little bit easier to actually, like, sit down, take a quiz, take a test, like, you could study a lot easier. You didn't have as many distractions. So like that is.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQBar plant protein bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low sugar brain and body fuel. IQ bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Literally the only reason that I have, I think I graduated with like a 3.1.
Uh-huh.
And I was like beyond happy because unlike you, it was freshman year for me when I realized I was never going to have a great GPA. Because I, you know when you have to submit your you have to submit your transcript to a rush.
Oh, do I have a story for you? Yes, I know what you're talking about.
Yep. It was so humbling. They were like, yeah, so you don't have a 2.7, like, you can't rush.
Yeah.
And I was like, excuse me,
I'm an engineer. Oh my God. I had like a literal similar experience. I think I had like a 2.75, like I was right on the cusp. Mm-hmm. And it's so dramatic looking back at it because like, it doesn't matter in the real world. And I had a great experience where I ended up anyway. But I was like, had my heart set on being AKO. My mom was an AKO.
Same.
I'm going AKO. And my mom like wrote a letter of recommendation. She had her sisters write a letter of recommendation for me. She like called her chapter. We did all the stuff to get me into AKO. And then they dropped me on the very last round right before pref. And they said it was because of my GPA. And I was bawling. I was so upset. And like, all, it's so funny because I was so cocky throughout the whole thing. I dropped every other sorority throughout Rush because I was like, I don't need them. All except like, I ended up going Pi Phi. So I had AKO and Pi Phi. And then I think that's it. That's all I had by the end of it. So then like, I only had Pi Phi when I submitted my thing, like pref.
Your bid.
Like,
yeah.
If they don't want me, I'm not going to be in a sorority. So upset, but it's like so dramatic looking back on it that it's like, it for what? For what?
No, I also submitted a suicide bid on bid day. I was like, yep, that's all I've got left for ya.
We'll see what happens.
Yep. And I was like, you know what? If I have to just rush again next year, that's what I'm gonna have to do because there's no way, like, this is it. This is it for me. This is all I've got for you guys.
You know what? I think I had a great sorority experience being in Pi Phi because I think Pi Phi at Miami is actually back on campus, which is
good for them.
Exciting. Good for. I'm so glad they, is it like recolonized or whatever it's called?
Yeah.
Because like, I feel like that's, I'm just so excited about that because I do love my sorority, but at the time I was so salty when they kicked us off campus because we weren't doing enough philanthropy, but I feel like I got a good amount of experience. I was in it freshman year. I was in it sophomore year. And then the summer between sophomore year and junior year is when they pulled the plug. But I feel like, you know, that allowed me to have other experiences junior year and senior year. At the time, it was like devastating. I was like, I'm so mad at these chapter old ladies. They're so crinkly and old and they have no idea what it's like to be in college anymore. Who are they to pull Pi Phi off the campus? But like looking back, everything happens for a reason. And I'm like, I had such a positive sorority experience. So I wouldn't change a thing.
Yeah. And it's so funny because although we didn't have the plug pulled on us, we had COVID pulled on us.
Right.
And they're like, no events, but hey, dues are still due. So how about you pay those?
Did they do any sort of discount or anything?
I think we didn't have to pay as much because we couldn't have rentals. We couldn't go out and rent. Yeah. And so we still had to pay like some sort of egregious like due fee and everyone just started dropping. They were like, what? Yeah. What is this? Why am I doing this?
Why would you pay for that? You know what? It's so funny because I feel like my prime sorority years were like the first semester of being in a sorority, your second semester freshman year, and then my first semester sophomore year. It was like, that's when we had the most rentals. That's when we were doing the most mixers with fraternities. I feel like I was such a social butterfly. And I don't even know what my grades were at that point. Like, you don't remember the classes.
No.
You don't remember the grades. You remember the experiences. And I feel like I got my experiences worth of that time.
Oh, 100%. And you got the bonus side of it where you didn't have to pay dues junior and senior year. Like, you had your friend group, you had your sisters, like, you had the people that you met through mixers. Like, what more do you need?
And I, you know what? My favorite experience was living in the dorm sophomore year with, like, yep, all the girls in your sorority. At first, like, I thought, because I had friends who went to other colleges at the time who went to sororities or were in sororities that had big houses. And mm-hmm. I thought we were kind of getting gypped because, you know, the whole brothel thing. You can't have a sorority house in Miami. It has to be in a dorm. No, I don't think it diminished my experience at all. I just remember, like, late nights running down the hall. I remember, actually, before Post Malone got big, he came and did a concert at Miami, and he was running up and down the Pi Phi hallway.
What?
Two of the girls from Pi Phi, and I just remember being like, am I dreaming? Post Malone is in the dorm! It was crazy, and I feel like those are the memories that I, like, cherish the most from being in a sorority.
Well, that and, like, okay, first of all, the Post Malone thing is insane because the closest thing that I have to that is Mason Ramsey. And the two just aren't the same. But anyways, like, it was also nice because you would have your first floor of your sorority, and then the next floor would be a different sorority, and then the floor on top of that. So there was so much, like, intermixing of sororities that, like, people weren't, I don't know, there was obviously a tier system, obviously.
Oh, yeah. We're definitely cliques.
100%. But I felt like living in the dorms helped mediate that in some sort of weird way, where, like, you would go up to, like, the second floor and hang out with your friends that were in, like, Delta Gamma, or you would go, like, to the third floor and hang out with your friends that were in Theta. Like, it was a lot, I don't know, more convenient and didn't feel as isolating.
Yeah, like, the other sorority that was on our floor, like, on the other end was Zeta, and we used to hang out with the Zetas all the time. I still follow a lot of them on social media, and it's, like, kind of fun to keep up with them still.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't think that, like, cross-pollination of friendships would have happened if we would have just been in houses versus dorms.
100% not. So, I know we kind of, like, jumped into, like, a bunch of random different topics, but while we're on the topic of college, that's kind of, like, where I feel like you're, and I'm speaking for you, where I have found, based on your social media footprint, that your, like, entrepreneurial mindset started. Like, first thing was your mask business? Like,
yeah.
Tell me about that.
The entrepreneur like aspirations go way back to when I was like 4 years old, and I used to charge my younger sister, like, I would play store with her and I would set up all my stuffed animals and I would charge her to pick one of my stuffed animals so that she could keep it on her bed. And in exchange, she had to give me some form of currency that I deemed acceptable at the point in time. So I feel like I've just always been so, like, obsessed with businesses, making your own money, making something from scratch. Like, then in middle school, it was all about the lemonade stands. And I did it with this one friend, and she just, like, wanted to make money so that she could get Webkinz from the local pharmacy. But I was like, no, we're turning this into a real business. So every single Saturday and Sunday, I was like, come on, we got to go do our lemonade stand. And she, I could tell, was definitely over it once she had enough money to pay for her Webkinz. But then it, like, moved on to, I feel like in high school, those friendship bracelets, like, I sold those. I even got in trouble one time for selling friendship bracelets at recess because I wasn't allowed to charge students and I was making money from it. And then
what?
In college, like, I didn't, like, have any sort of a business, but Lexi and I used to sit in our house with a whiteboard in front of us just being like, what kind of business can we start? And I remember even at one point, we got samples because we were like, we're going to start a skincare brand. And we, like, got samples of packaging delivered to the house. But then we were like, oh, wait, we only have $50 in our bank account. We can't get prototypes.
So how did you even get samples? You were just like, hey, we're interested in starting this business. Send us samples.
I think she got samples from, like, Alibaba or something, like, of the bottles, because we were, like, trying to concept what the packaging would be like. Like, we were always, like, we would watch YouTube, like, in between classes, and we would just be like, how can these YouTube beauty influencers be making so much money, and we are going to school for engineering, and we are going to make a tiny, tiny, tiny percent? And not that it's all about money, but I feel like it's just about, like, being efficient with your time. Like, if I'm sitting behind a desk all day long, and then these people that are, like, doing something creative, have a creative outlet, doing something they love, talking to people about things they love, are making way more money than I am. Anyway, all that was, like, a long ramble to answer your question. Then after I graduated, So I graduated in 2019, the winter of 2019. So then I like started my first job out of college January of 2020. And then we all know what happened in March of 2020. So I decided to, I had my husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, I took his iPad. And I always wanted to post on social media, but I was so afraid of what other people would think. I was so afraid to show my face. I also was like, I'm like a small town girl in Wisconsin. Who am I to be making videos? What am I going to talk about? So I resorted to making digital art on his iPad, and then I would turn it into stickers, and I would sell the stickers throughout COVID, which turned into like making t-shirts, making masks. I got like the whole suite of Cricut products with like, yep. At this point I have a big girl job, you know, I have my engineering.
You have Cricut money. You don't need Alibaba money.
Paycheck. I got my Cricut money. So it like turned into that. And then I think I did that maybe for about a year. I want to say I made like $2,500 from doing that, which at the time was like,
yeah.
On my Shopify, and I was like, I have made $2,000 on my own from selling shirts and stickers. Like, I was hooked, and it kind of just has snowballed and evolved from there.
Yeah. So you started with the iPad drawing thing, mm-hmm. scared of showing your face, mm-hmm. and now that's all you do in your videos. Not mm-hmm. all you do, but like primarily yeah. is you talking to the camera. It's mm-hmm. not like voiceover. It's normally not voiceovers, but yeah. it's normally you talking directly to the camera, talking about finance. But there was mm-hmm. a long journey to get there. Like in the middle of that was the podcast, which is another opportunity where you were showing your face. So mm-hmm. how did you get from making t-shirts to almost like a complete redirection of mm-hmm. podcasting about engineering?
Yeah, I know. We've been on like a long squiggly journey. I think one day I just realized maybe...
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
This was in 2021, because, yeah, at this point, my husband and I were living in around 2020, 2021. I kind of got fed up. I was seeing all these people post on social media, sharing things that they are passionate about, talking to the camera. And I was like, that is what I want to do. Why am I sitting here? Mm-hmm. Like, not that I don't love making physical products. I think that whole thing is so cool. I loved the whole unboxing experience that I was able to deliver to customers, and like branding, all of that like scratches my brain in just the right way. Mm-hmm. But that's not really what I wanted to be doing. So I remember I made this like announcement post on my Instagram, because I've had the same Instagram this whole time. Like,
oh yeah, no. And you can go back and like scroll through all of it.
Because I know some people are like, oh no, then I have to start a different Instagram if I'm going to like do a different business. No, I was like, I'm keeping the same Instagram, because at this point, I think I had built my audience up to over 5,000 followers on Instagram. So I'm like, why would I get rid of this hard work?
Yeah.
I made this post, and it was like such a long caption, and it was that was when people were really into like making pictures with, remember the app PicsArt, where you could like
yep.
do crazy stuff on your pictures, because it was yeah. COVID, that so everybody was really into that, like you could make the sky sparkly and like
yep
stickers all over it. I did like a collage of photos like that, and I was like, I am closing down the business, like this page is going to be just like a place for me to express myself. And I started making videos about like how to be an influencer, like how to edit your videos, how to edit your pictures, like mm-hmm. how to take pictures when nobody is around. That's when like the app Lens Buddy was popping off, and I would do mm-hmm. tutorials about like how to use Lens Buddy. And then I realized that like nobody I think it helped because it was COVID. Nobody in my real life was like saying anything. Nobody was like, oh, I've noticed you start showing your face. What are you doing?
Yeah.
That was what I was most afraid of. Since nobody was doing that, I just kept popping off with videos. I was like, I'm going to experiment a little bit here, experiment a little bit there. I started posting about like my engineering job, and that started popping off because it was like, I think the first video I posted was things that I learned at my real engineering job that engineering school didn't teach me. Mm-hmm. And boy, did I say the wrong things in that video because I pissed a ton of people off saying that I didn't know what a bearing was until I got to the real world.
And okay, but like, why would you? You know?
And like, in my defense, I was working on combined cycle steam turbines at the time, where a bearing is like larger than the size of a car tire. Why would I have ever pictured anything of that geometry in college? Like, I'm thinking these little tiny ball bearings, you know, that are in toys and stuff. That's what I was talking about.
Yep.
So it just kind of like evolved from there. And then my friend Lexi and I, it's funny, she came up for a wine date. Her and her boyfriend came up, and me and my boyfriend at the time, we went out and we got a bottle of wine. By the end of the bottle of wine, we both looked at each other, and at the same time, we were like, should we start a podcast? It was like this spark moment where we were like, yay, we're so excited. We both want to start a podcast. Because remember, this is the same girl who, like, in college, we were always like, what can we do to make money? So that's kind of where the idea was born. And then we did the podcast for a year and a half. It was a really good run before we kind of hung up our microphones, as you might say.
Hung up your hard hats.
Yeah, we hung up our hard hats.
So what was it that kind of made you stop podcasting? I remember reading on the, what was it, My Best Friend's an Engineer. I remember reading one of the announcements of, this is getting too involved with our like personal work. We don't want to overstep any boundaries. We're taking a step back.
You are going to love this story. You are going to love this story. In the middle of doing My Best Friend's an Engineer, I had moved jobs for the first time. And this was like really emotional for me because, I don't know, I'm a very loyal person. And I had woke up one day at my first job out of college and was just like, I told you, remember that I'm kind of impulsive. I just had this idea, like, I think it's time for me to switch jobs. And so without much thought, I immediately started applying to things on LinkedIn, got offers from three different companies to do interviews.
Dang, that's impressive.
Went through, like, this was during the big boom of hiring. Remember, like, I feel like we've kind of gone through a wave of this big boom of hiring, and now it's kind of like not so much of a boom, but
it's a bust right now.
A little bit of a, is that a bear or a bull market?
It's a bear market for sure.
And I went through the process of doing all these interviews. I got an offer at the company that I work now, and this company, to put some perspective, when I was doing my co-op, was the company that everybody was like, this is the place to work. It wasn't the company that I did my co-op with, but it was like a different engineering firm within Milwaukee that is the place to work if you have your engineering degree. And this is where I got a job offer from. It was crazy. It was nuts. So I have to provide all this background because now I'm at this new job, okay? I'm like, this is my dream place to be. It's the type of company where I have so much satisfaction in telling people that's where I work. Like, it's that type of company to me. And when I was doing the interview process, I was very transparent. Like, I do social media. I run a media business on the side. I work with these brands. I work with these companies to promote their products. You know, I, of course, would never do something if there was a conflict of interest, but like, this is what I post about. Oh, and I have this podcast that I do with my friend about engineering. And that really, I think, made me stand out in the interview process because they're like, oh, that's so cool. You don't just go home at the end of a workday. You like have...
You have a life.
You have a life. You have a passion that you like are executing a strategy on outside of work. So everybody knew. I don't think they really knew though. You know, like I think they knew, but nobody had ever really looked it up or like tried to find me. It was just like, oh yeah, she's told us about that. That's cool. So I was working a lot with this steel-toed boot company, Xena Workwear.
Xena.
I love Xena. And Xena, before I even started working with them, they were the very first steel-toed boot I had purchased on my own. Like, this is before social media. My friends had recommended, friends from Miami recommended that I get some steel-toed boots from Xena Workwear. They had done some sort of like a blog post about mm-hmm. me. And they were like, we would love to get some pictures of you in front of where you work. I thought that was no big deal. I was like, oh yeah, let's do it outside of working hours. We did it on a Saturday. I met their photographer where I work. We stood in the parking lot. I like kind of posed by the sign with my Xena workwear boots. They got some pictures for the blog post. Blog post went up. They put it on their LinkedIn. All great. This was on a Sunday. It spread like wildfire on LinkedIn, all the way to the point where the president of the company, the umbrella company of the company that I work for, had seen this and was kind of like, who the fuck is this girl? And so sent out a blast email to all the VPs at the company that I work for and was like, who does this girl work for? My VP was like, that's me. So they had this like legal investigation into my social media because they were trying to find a conflict of interest that I was like leaking secrets about my company to social media, to somebody, I don't know who to. This all was because the picture of the brand's or like my company's logo was in Xena Workwear's post, and Xena Workwear had recently done a collaboration with one of our big competitors. And so it was kind of like this weird, like kind of connected link that they were saying, yeah. Oh, conflict of interest because you worked with a company that's seen with them and like that gives us a bad rap, which I don't believe that to one slightest bit. But anyway, so I get this meeting on my calendar with my VP and I'm thinking, oh, we're talking about a new opportunity for me. He sees some potential, like he sees some growth in me. Like I get in, he has this big stack of white papers next to him. He says, can you please sit down? I'm like, sure. How's it going? What's up? He turns over the first sheet of paper. It's a picture of my Instagram.
See, why do they print it out? We're in the digital area. Like, pull up my Instagram. Why'd you print it out?
They printed out every single one. They like went through my TikTok and my Instagram, screenshotted every single like slide of video and photo that I ever had posted, had them printed out in the stack. And he was like, do you know what this is? And I was like, yeah, it's my social media. And he was like, across the table, slides the article from Xena Workwear. Do you know what this is? Like, it was this whole big dramatic thing. And long story short, TLDR, they didn't like that I was working, that I had appeared in a blog post. The whole thing was that I didn't get permission for Xena Workwear to use the company's logo in a piece of their, like, they didn't like that my company's logo lived on Xena Workwear's website in the form of a blog post. Like that was apparently violating company policy. And so then like up until this point, I was filming day in the lives where like I would just film like little clips of me here and there at work. Of course, I would never have a video of something confidential that we're working on. Like it's my face taking up the whole screen. It would just be to kind of like have that B-roll, have that filler to be like, oh, things that I'm doing as an engineer at work today. And that was not okay. Totally understand that. There's nothing in the social media policy that said that you couldn't do that, but they thought I was editing the videos at work on work time, which I was like, I'm not. I do it in the mornings and at night I wasn't going to argue with them. So after this whole debacle, this whole scandal, I was like, Lexi, I think we should shut the podcast down. Like, we at the time weren't making any money from it. I'm obviously making money from my full-time job. I didn't want to risk anything with my form of income. So 10 minutes later, I have explained to you the reason why we ended the podcast, but it's like, it's one of those things where I have this running Google Doc of things that happened to me in my life. If someone were to ever ask me to write a book about my life, I want to have some material ready. So as soon as I have it, I was like, I know I need to add this to my Google Doc of like crazy things that have happened to me in my life.
That is so wild. The only thing that has ever happened to me that is remotely similar to that is in high school, I used to I don't know. I was one of those people that people followed, like everyone in school followed my Twitter.
Yeah.
And I had a coach that no one was particularly fond of. Mm-hmm. And we would kind of like make jokes.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQBar plant protein bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
About, and like, it was all in good fun, though. Like, it wasn't like anything malicious. It wasn't anything with malintent. And I really loved Photoshop. I thought it was hilarious. And so I would edit our coach onto opposing team's mascots. Like, it would be like him sitting on top of an eagle flying, or him like riding a bear or stuff like that. It was all in jest. It was good fun. He invites me into the locker room. Weird.
And we're like, hello?
I'm a freshman on the varsity team, which was like not common. And I was like, oh, is he like gonna ask me to be like team captain or something? Like, my egotistical ass. And I sit down. He also has a stack of papers. And I'm like, oh, this is weird.
Stack of papers.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's digital media. Show me like on your phone. Like, why are you printing it out? You're taking the time to print it out. You're looking at it when it's printing out. Like, it is just a weird concept. He pulls up the first picture and he goes, what's this? I was like, oh, that's a photo I edited of you on an eagle. And then he pulls up the next one and he's like, what about this one? I'm like, that is a picture of you edited on a bear. And then he kept going, and I'm like, all of these are just photos of you edited on something. And he's like, so what does it mean? I'm like, that we're playing that team tonight? I don't know what you want me to say. And it was not well received. Nothing bad ever came of it, but he pretty much like had a vendetta against me after that. He couldn't bench me because I was a good player, but he always was like out to get me, in a sense. And honestly, I don't blame him. I'm a freaking 17-year-old girl, like, cropping him onto an eagle. Like, okay. Yeah.
That's funny.
Really, really the only situation that I had that was similar to that didn't cause me to shut down a podcast. But...
It was so like interesting, because then the next day that VP, he came by and he was like, could you give me some feedback on maybe like how I could have handled that situation better? And we like went and got coffee together, and I was like, you could have just like come by my desk or like asked me to go down and get coffee with you. Like, it's not a secret. It's not a big deal. And he was like, huh? And I was like, you like football, right? This is like my version of football. This is what I do for fun outside of work. And he was like, oh. So now like we have a great working relationship. We did before, we did after, but it was just like one of those things where I was like, this did not need to be that serious.
Yeah.
Like, you could have just said, hey, ask them to take that down. That's a conflict of interest. And I would have been like, okay.
Yeah, that's the funny, then honestly, like, good on him for going back to me, like, hey, I feel like that didn't go well, like, can you give me some notes? Because there are so many people that I've had negative meetings with, and not on my accord, because I'm a perfect angel, but, like, the way that they had, like, approached something with me, that it was, like, it seemed a little bit, like, too direct, and... that's it. Like, it's just uncomfortable from there on out. Like, there's no conversation of, hey, I felt like that was uncomfortable, or hey, how do we move on from here, or what could have been said differently, or how could I have approached that differently? So good on him. That's
yeah, it's interesting where I work, because one of our key like culture words is candid. And so it was a really big culture shock to come to this company where people will come up to your desk after a meeting and directly say, like, I don't think that went very well. You didn't prepare as much as I thought you should have prepared. Here's what you should do next time. That was really hard for me. Now I'm really used to it. And I'm really used to like giving people feedback, hearing feedback. It's never easy, but it's funny because I've started to do that with like my family in real life. And I have to remind myself that they're not as used to it. And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, it's so normal for me to go up to you and tell you that you could have handled the situation a little bit better. And they're like, what?
No, it's
not. I'm like, okay, no, not everyone's in the corporate world. I'm sorry.
Yeah. That honestly was probably one of the best pieces of advice that I ever got, because I've had, again, meetings that don't go the way that they've been intended. And the advice that was given to me is, people will ask you for feedback, but if they're not in a space to receive it, then there's no point in giving the feedback. So that has always been my approach. But then that's such an uncomfortable question of, are you ready for me to give you some feedback? Or are you in a space to give me, like, obviously I have something to say. That's like saying, that's like texting somebody and being like, I have to tell you something.
I know. Or it's like, I had this experience one time at work where someone was giving me feedback and I didn't realize that she was giving me feedback. Halfway through the conversation, I was like, in my mind, I was like, oh, she's giving me feedback right now. And then like, it ended really weird where she was, it was like, oh, are you going to this one company happy hour? And I was like, what? And so it was just strange. So then the next day I went down to her desk and I was like, I think you were you giving me feedback the other day? Like, I don't think I really understood that you were giving me feedback. So can we like try that conversation again? Just cause I wasn't in the right headspace. Like it can be, one side of the scale is like, oh, it's awkward to say, are you ready for feedback? The other side is like, I just was so out of it that day. I was like, oh my God, I didn't even realize that this was happening.
Yeah. And honestly, like, there's so many nuances to, like, especially professional conversations versus non-professional. Like, in my realm, I currently work as a contractor for an engineering company. And you have engineers that work in offices, and then you have contractors. Those are two different conversations you're having.
Totally.
Two different structures of how you're talking to somebody. One, you are extremely candid, direct. You don't need to sugarcoat anything. The other one, you are using every corporate like slogans, jargon, whatever, circle back, can we revisit, blah blah blah, low-hanging fruit, like you are using all of the jargon to say one sentence that ends up taking you three sentences, and then you talk about that for like 5 minutes before you even get to what you want to talk about. I'm like, what is this? What's happening?
Oh yeah, sometimes the tact, I feel like, is just taken a bit too far. I was working on an email to someone higher up in my company this week, and me and this girl spent 30 minutes trying to construct a 5-sentence email. Granted, he was like a president level, but it's just so funny because I'm like, I would love it if we could get to the point where I can just send an email that's like, hey, I have something to say.
And honestly, that is the point that I have gotten to with emailing. I am just like, I'm going to say what I need to say because I'm not emailing back and forth with you about it 5 times before we are like, hey, actually, let's just have a meeting. Right. I'm just going to say, hey, I need to talk to you about this. Either let's have a meeting or let's put something on the books in terms of getting together and talk about this. Like, this is, I can't do the email thing.
A lot of times I will lean on ChatGPT. I, of course, remove all of the confidential information. But if I, sometimes I'm like, reword this sentence but add tact, and it like gives me like more tact.
That's a good word, actually. I'm gonna start using that. And speaking of ChatGPT, I was at work and we were in a meeting with my entire team, and we had an icebreaker, and one of the engineers asked us like, what is our favorite tool? And me being a Gen Z, like millennial, whatever, on the cusp, was like, my favorite tool is ChatGPT. I log on to my work computer yesterday, the day after that I say that that's my favorite tool, ChatGPT is blocked. You cannot access this site. I'm like,
no way. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Sometimes we get emails of like corporate policy when using AI. And I'm like, they're so nervous about like all the stuff that's going to happen. Corporations are. And I feel like you just got to be smart about it. Like, I'm not going to put the name or the type of product or the company, like anything into that. I'm usually just rewording a sentence about like something not an issue, you know?
Or I'm like, hey, how should I construct this email so that I can send it out with it being completely concise? Here's the topic that I need you to cover, and here's the person that I'm asking. And like, I just put a title and I put the topic, and then it shoots out an email.
And then it'll figure it out. You know, sometimes I even use ChatGPT for content creation because I am such a long-winded person. And sometimes I have such a challenging time getting to the point right away, because I feel like with videos nowadays, you have to hook someone right away.
In 1 second.
And then you have to give them the result right away too, for them to even feel that the video is worth their time for continuing to watch. So sometimes I even use ChatGPT to be like, this is what I want to say. These are like the details for the video get to the point immediately. And then like, I'll be like, oh, so this is kind of like how I should structure the video.
Yeah. And going back to you ending the podcast, that kind of enters into your realm of what you're in now. So you kept creating content. It strayed away from engineering and started to go back into more of like your hobbies. Mm-hmm. And I remember, who was the podcaster / influencer in finance that you don't rely on daddy? Was that her?
You don't depend on daddy.
Yes. Nikita. I remember you were talking to me about her and you were like, I really like what she's doing. I'm really interested in that. And the next thing I know, you have like 200,000 followers on TikTok and you're posting about finance, about how you're debt free and how TikTok paid off your car. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, what's going on? Yeah, no, because after that whole like awkward situation happened with my VP, I was like, well, the way the conversation ended, he was like, you can keep posting, just like you can't. Like, we love STEM. We love women in STEM. We want you to keep posting. And I was kind of like, F you. Like, I'm not
going to post that anymore.
Like, I'm not going to give you the power of, like, what I can and can't say about this topic. So I'm just not even going to talk about the topic at all.
Yeah.
So I completely 180'd my social media once again. And I just started talking about, you know, personal finance. That's another thing. I feel like it interweaves really well with entrepreneurship. And mm-hmm. we go, you know, go back to that whole story I told you about how in college we used to watch the YouTubers and I was obsessed with like, how are they making this amount of money? Mm-hmm. I've just always been so fascinated with like, what are people doing to make money? And like, mm-hmm. how are they using their money? I also grew up in a household where money was not talked about at all. It was like so mm-hmm. taboo. I never knew how much money my parents made. I still don't know. They never talked about like, this is what you should be doing to have a savings account, or like, this is what the stock market is. So I just kind of like craved that conversation. And I decided it was a good topic for me to start openly sharing about on social media, because then I could kind of like get that dopamine hit of talking about finances with other people. And then I could mm-hmm. also like share what I was learning, because I'm by no means an expert in any of that stuff. And I'm just kind of like doing my own thing, trying to like live life and figure everything out. Going back to like the Airbnb stuff, I'm just trying to learn it all, you know, figure it out. So I just started sharing about, you know, I really want to leave corporate one day. And I know that mm-hmm. the first step to leaving corporate is us being debt free. So we started aggressively paying off my cars. My husband paid off his car first last summer, and then we paid off my car next. Now, the only thing we have left is student loans. But I noticed that people really resonated with just like the emotional aspect of paying off debt mm-hmm. and like, it's the type of thing that takes you such a long time and you'd never really feel gratification with paying off debt. I think that's why it's so challenging for people, because people get bored because they're like, I keep sending $200 extra to this $100,000 loan and I'm not even chipping away at it. So like,
yeah,
I need to figure out a way to like make it fun, keep it engaging,
gamify it. Yeah.
Gamify. Oh, I'm big into gamifying things and like turn it into kind of a little competition for myself. And now, like, that is what I am talking about on social media now. And I feel like mm-hmm. I'm still kind of in that era. I'm still really obsessed with that topic.
Yeah. So was that, like, an immediate shift? Because I know there's so many things. Like, I'm trying to grow myself as an influencer because I have the same aspirations as you. Corporate America is not for me. I'm doing it to get by right now. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully I'll be independent. Exactly. I'm doing it to pay for my podcast right now. And then hopefully my podcast will be paying for itself. But for me, I keep feeling like I'm seeing these content creators that are like, don't pick your own niche, have your audience pick your niche. And then other influencers are like, solidify your niche immediately. And obviously your niche has changed so many times, mm-hmm. but it's always been along the same vein of like entrepreneurial and growth, whether that's like personal finance. Like, so did you just start posting about like financial stuff and then kind of just continued rolling off of what was successful, or how did you navigate that?
Switched it immediately. Like immediately I mm-hmm. changed my bio. Immediately I started posting different content, and I kind of had the mindset, like, obviously when you do that severe of a shift, you lose followers, which right. I kept just trying to tell myself, like, that's because those people are no longer my target audience. So it's okay if those followers mm-hmm. leave, because other ones are going to start to be attracted to me in this space. And mm-hmm. I feel like I still do this where I'm very much always experimenting with like, what topics are interesting right now? What hooks are people interested in right now? And I try to like replicate where applicable. So one example I can give you is, I noticed that I made a video about grocery shopping and I shared like, hey, we're two people, dual income, no kids. This is our grocery budget. And we're trying to stick to it, but it's kind of hard. And that's a topic that people have a lot of opinions about. People were telling me where to shop. Like, you shouldn't be shopping at Walmart. You should be shopping at Aldi. People were shocked that $500 budget for 1 month of two people was like either a lot of money or not a lot of money for them. Like, so I try to kind of find these topics where it seems like people have a lot of opinions around.
Yeah.
And like, try to keep talking about them in different ways. So it's not, I don't know. Like, I definitely think I have an overarching niche, but I'm not like trying to just talk about the same thing over and over again. I just always am trying to like relate it back. Like, if I'm going to do a vlog, like, nobody cares about vlogs. Like, I'm kind of a nobody, you know? Like, if you're scrolling on social media and I don't have any relevance to you or any relevance to anything, like, I'm not anchored to anything, unless I have a million followers, you're not going to watch that day in the life video because you don't care. But if I do a day in the life video that's like day in the life of a girl trying to pay off debt while having a full-time job as a content creator and being a content creator, then someone sees that video and they're like, whoa, like, I want to watch this. Like, how does this girl do this? What, I'm paying off debt right now too. What kind of a life does she have? Because maybe I can relate to her. Then I feel like that's when people start to lock in, and that's when you start to grow your community.
Yeah, because I remember the first influencer that I ever came across was on YouTube. It was Casey Neistat.
Okay.
And that is how he got his big claim to fame, was vlogs. He vlogged every single day for like 800 days.
Yeah.
And his life was debatably not that interesting. You're watching his content. The videos were like, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 minutes long for a day. And he would do the same things. He would wake up, he would go on a run, he would skateboard, he would talk about like Q&As. And I'm like, why am I interested? Like, I am interested. I don't know who Casey Neistat is. Why am I interested in watching this?
Right.
And so that has been my big thing, is like, what am I interested in watching? And so for you, it seems like you are modeling after videos that you find success in, and you're modeling off of what you're interested in and trying to figure out what the hooks are. Are there any inspirations to you that you go and look for and you're like, I really like what this person did? It might not be in the realm of finance, but I really like what this person did. I'm going to go recreate it. I really like how they posed this. Like, is there any sort of inspirations that you pull from, or is it primarily just from your own brain?
No, absolutely. I love to look at creators that are in my same niche, but then I also love following like all the New York influencer girlies. And I kind of like want to try to mash the two together in a way. So from a finance perspective, I love following this creator, Alex on a Budget. She recently also paid off her cars. She lives in Chicago. She also has a 9-to-5. So I like to tap into some of her videos for inspiration, like around what topics are people liking to listen to right now? How does she incorporate her job content with, you know, finance? Because I'm not necessarily talking about my job, but I'm talking about like my life around my job. And then from like a non-finance creator perspective, I love watching the twins in New York, Acquired Style and her sister Danielle. I don't know if you've ever seen them. They're like blonde twins that live in New York. And they do a lot of like day in the life of being my own boss, or like day in the life of a fashion influencer. But I love their editing style. It's really like quick, choppy. Like every clip is like them putting on a skincare thing, but it's like all really quick. It really is like catching my attention. And I like don't have a long attention span, so I love the way that they chop those up. So sometimes I like to look at those videos for like, what is the style that people are liking to watch? And then how do I like layer on top the finance thing? And that's like where I feel like I create my own videos.
Yeah. And I recently have gotten back into watching Casey Neistat because I'm like, what is it about? Because he did long form content. And the majority of what I'm posting, aside from the podcast being posted on YouTube, is short form content. And I'm like, these two are vastly different, but you can take ideas of what he's doing or what he's talking about into your own realm of things, like what you're saying, mashing two things together and making it your own. And his advice was exactly that. It was go and find somebody that you like watching and recreate it. Whatever you do, it's not, it might seem like mimicking them or might seem like copycatting, but once you add your own flair to it, it's yours.
It's an original video. Yeah. And I try to look at it as, I heard this really good quote from Mel Robbins the other day. I love listening to Mel Robbins' podcast, where she said, you're just putting the reps in. Like, I'm not, mm-hmm. I try to look at it as I'm not trying to make a video that is going to take off and go viral and start my career as an influencer. Because if I did that, then I would be disappointed with every single video until that happens. And usually that's like the 1% of videos, you know, go viral and hit over 1 million views. You're not going to make that kind of video every single day. So every time I post, even if it doesn't really perform how I might have wanted it to perform, I just try to remind myself I'm putting the reps in. Like, if mm-hmm. I'm not posting like the videos, then nobody's going to see them and I have no chances of growth. But if I am posting the videos, even if they don't necessarily perform well, I'm getting the practice in, I'm putting the reps in, so that when it does take off and when I do end up having 1 million followers one day, I have the practice of talking in front of a camera and I can produce the content that my audience would expect of me at that level.
Mm-hmm. And there's so many like influencers that are coming across my page about content creation, because that's what I'm interested in right mm-hmm. now. And there was this one girl, she was so funny. She goes, you know what? If you're not posting consistently, there's people in jail that are. There's people that are posting daily in jail. So what's your excuse? Why are you not doing it? And I thought that was so funny. I was like, there's always going to be an excuse. There's always going to be a reason why you can't, or an obstacle as to why you can't. I don't have enough followers, so why would anyone care? I don't. But it's data. Every time you're getting a rep in, you're getting a data point of either what people like, or for me, more often than not, what people don't really want to see. It's like, either end of that, you can start feeding into more and more what people like. Because at the end of the day, the unfortunate thing about being a creator, and you see this so often, especially with artists, of their work really isn't what they want it to be. It's what the audience or what their customers are wanting. And so you have to cater to that. So you have to kind of set your own mindset aside of, this is what I want to do, but I know that that's not what people care about, so what we want to see. So how do you separate the two? Is there content that you want to make that you don't necessarily make right now?
There's definitely, like, I love the vlog style. There's definitely, you know, videos that I post them anyway, but they never really do well. And I really do think it's because, like, nobody gives a shit. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, yep. And that's kind of like a hard thing to wrestle with making the videos, because it's like, no one cares about my life. But also I post them because I'm like, this is what I like to sit down and do. So if I sprinkle in one of those every once in a while, who cares? It's my social media. Like, I'm posting for me. And I've noticed that, like, the more that I create content, I want to say that I'm going to keep doing it every day, but I feel like sometimes I get this hyperfixation, and I fear that I might be in a point of hyperfixation where I do it every day. But you do it enough times where it's like, if a video that I posted yesterday doesn't do well, that's okay, because there are 7 or 10 other opportunities in the week where I can experiment with different content that I know my audience maybe prefers a little bit better. That, like, if I have this video sitting on my page and it's not performing as well, that's okay with me.
Right. Especially if it's something that you enjoy doing, because as soon as you don't enjoy the creation process and you don't enjoy what you're posting, you're going to stop doing it.
Yeah. And I've been trying to have more of like a, this is a job mindset in 2025. Mm-hmm. Going back to the Mel Robbins thing, she had another really good quote of like, I don't care if you don't want to do it that day. I don't care if you don't feel like that. That's not like where motivation is. And that's not how great people become great. Like, you better be doing it every single day, even if you don't want to be doing it. And I've heard so many like conflicting like opinions about that. Some people are like, oh, you shouldn't be creating even if you don't want to create. But for me, it's kind of like a, not a life or death situation, but it's like, when am I going to then be doing it every day? I'll like know that this eventually is what you would be doing as a content creator who does this professionally every day. When would I make that switch? So I'm trying to just like do it anyway, get the reps in, post things online, not care about the views, not care about the outcome, and focus instead on the routine and the consistency and see where that gets me.
Yeah. And that is also something that I've been seeing, because I'm still trying to doctor like what my niche even is, because I don't have a crazy following. The only following that I got was when I was on the ranch. I'm no longer on the ranch. So that's tough for me. And so I've been slowly draining followers, and I'm like, okay, when are we going to see that rebuild? What's it going to take? So I have also recently, 2025, decided that I'm going to post every day. Yeah. And the conflicting thing for me is like, I don't love being on my phone. I love being outside. I love doing things off devices. I just like being in touch with nature. But I'm also so passionate about content creation, about having constructive conversations, about personal development. And I have found myself at a state where I'm like, I'm spending way more time on social media now than I was before I was a content creator. And I call myself a content creator loosely. But before I was creating content, because I'm trying to see what people want. I'm trying to see what's trending. I'm like, where's the balance? So how do you find balance of not upping your screen time 200%?
So what I have been noticing has been successful for me lately is Instagram stories. I will film talking Instagram stories only at one time in the day. Like I will do while I'm getting ready, I will talk about like, hey, this is what's on my agenda for the day. This is what I'm doing today. And then I never look at my Instagram stories until the next day. Because I noticed that like if I'm trying to post updates on my Instagram stories throughout the day, then I start to feel really burned out because it's like I'm constantly looking for those opportunities where I can share something with people.
Mm-hmm.
Instagram stories, I'm doing once a day. I'm not like aiming for a duration or a length or anything. It's just once a day. We're getting at least one Instagram story up. For the actual videos, I've been really feeling so accomplished with getting them done in the morning before work. It is so challenging to have a coherent conversation to your phone at 5:30 in the morning when you're doing your makeup. Mm-hmm. So like I'm trying to figure out how to work on that and like be a little bit more peppy and a little bit more awake and a little bit more myself in the morning. But if I am able to film two videos in the morning before work, and if I have time to edit one of those and post them even before I have done my commute to work, I have done my job. Like I have done what I want to do with my life. And that makes me feel so much more accomplished at the end of the day versus before. I was trying to be consistent with content creation and doing it at the end of my workday when I got home. Mm-hmm. At this point, it's like 6 p.m., 6:30 p.m. And I would be like, oh, the last thing I want to do right now is film a video. But like, I know that I need to do it if I want to grow my community, grow my audience. Versus now, if I can do it in the morning and kind of like habit stack it onto my morning routine.
Yep.
Then at the end of the day, if I have another video in the queue waiting to edit, I'm like, oh, great. I've already posted one. So like, it doesn't really matter whether or not I edit this one, but like, I want to edit it. So let's get two videos up for the day. And that seems to be really working out. I've only done it for about 2 weeks now. So I'm really hoping to like continue this habit, but I have to like, maybe I should film a video telling myself like, hey, you better be doing this so that I can revisit if I ever like fall off because I'm feeling really good about it so far.
Yeah. I mean, that's awesome. And it's so hard because social media is addicting and that is like the whole intent of it. And I feel like, especially when you're trying to figure out what is trending right now? What are people wanting to watch? What am I wanting to watch? How do I improve my content? It feels like you have your solidified routine and your set ideology of what your construct for your videos looks like. And so how often do you typically find yourself just scrolling social media, looking at other people's stuff?
Quite a bit. But what I try to remind myself is when I doom scroll, I know it doesn't make me feel good. So I've been doing things like I put my phone in the living room when I go to bed at night so that I don't bring my phone into the bedroom so that I'm not doom scrolling at night. I'm not doom scrolling in the morning. Mm-hmm. When I do find myself scrolling, like if it's the afternoon after work or something, I do try to put some sort of a time limit on it. So they say like starting at 6 o'clock, I'm going to get up and I'm going to do this. Or another thought that often comes into my mind is like, I could be using this time to create content. And instead, I'm watching what other people have created right now. Is that in alignment with my higher self? Would my higher self be making content right now, or would she be watching content? So I try to ask myself those questions. And then in terms of like scrolling for inspiration, we talked about those people that I like to watch and get inspiration from. I just try to go back to those 4 or 5 content creators that I personally really enjoy and scroll their videos for a little bit before I create content, because it's like, I don't need to have inspiration from the whole world. I don't need to have inspiration from every single video on TikTok. Go find the people that you like to watch and just focus on them to get inspiration for. And that way I don't have to feel like I just have to scroll for 15 minutes to find a trend. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what's tough is like for me, I am trying to figure out again what my niche is and trying to figure out, okay, is my niche going to be something that I should follow this influencer for or this influencer for? And so I'm trying to go to a bunch of different pages and the recommendations that I'm getting. And then you get in this spiral, or I have gotten in this spiral of, then you just get all of these like, oh, you want to make passive income? Go ahead and sell an Etsy template or a Canva template on Etsy. I'm like, that's not what I'm trying to do here. Like, in what realm am I trying to make passive income from a template on Etsy? Like, what are you talking about? Yeah. And then it feels so defeating after in social media. I have a love-hate relationship with it. I think it can provide a lot of positive things. But I also, at the end of the day, just like you said, I'm looking at my screen time. I'm like, oh my, how did I spend 2 hours on TikTok and Instagram today?
Yeah.
Like, how did that happen? I feel like, and then I have this pang of anxiety. I'm like, oh my God. Oh my, I'm not, like my content is not.
It's like, oh my God.
Literally, yes.
Oh my God.
Yes. And I'm literally just like thinking to myself, I get anxiety attacks. I gave myself an anxiety attack like 2 weeks ago because I'm like scrolling content, trying to get inspiration. I get disinspired. I get so... I'm like,
what is even the point?
Yes.
Then you're like, why do I even post? I found too, like, no matter what niche it is that I'm talking about, whether it's finance or entrepreneurship or like even, you know, studying to get an MBA, like all these random topics, if I can stick to telling someone, here's what happened and why, or like, here's how. Those are the two types of videos that I always try to come back to that seem to provide value that even if it's someone within my audience or someone external to my audience, if you are scrolling and someone says like, here's how I bought a house. Even if you don't know that person, you're like, I wonder how they bought that house. Like, it's almost like you trigger this question in their mind that makes them stick around that like, if I'm ever in a content creation rut, I keep like a running list on my phone of like content ideas, but I try to think of like, what are some experiences that I have or like accomplishments that I have in my life that like I could explain here's how or here's why.
Yeah. And to like just solidify that that's true, my top performing episodes are how do I move? How do I move to Chicago? How do I move to New York? How do I move to LA? How do I buy a home? And it's like, okay, maybe there is something to that, asking the greater question.
Yeah, asking the thought-provoking questions online.
Exactly. So in reflection to your many career paths that have taken off from social media, what are your recommendations for like someone who's starting from scratch, trying to get off the ground in terms of influencing?
Okay, so rapid fire, it would be post quality content on a consistent schedule. If it's not every day for you, make it every other day. If it's not every other day, make it Monday, Friday. But no, your chances of success will increase exponentially depending on the amount of times you post. So like, set your expectations realistically depending on how realistic you can post your content. Don't post and ghost. Like, don't post every single day for a week and then you're like, oh, I'm not going to post again until next month. You're not going to build a following. Because I like to think of it as like, a friend that you Snapchat or like a friend that you're texting. If you like, if I have like long streaks with my friends on Snapchat where we like,
that's impressive.
We have like a running conversation that's been going on for like 5 years just because we like reply via Snapchat.
Yeah.
If they reply to me for a while, like I'm less likely to want to respond to them. So kind of treat your audience in that way. Next tip would be start to follow other creators who are also like just starting or like around the same following range as you and interact with them, actually find something interesting to say about their videos. Because I heard this really good quote the other day. It was like, rising tides raise ships. The more that you comment on other people's videos, the more like good karma and manifestation you're just like putting out into the world, and people like more likely to comment on your things. Next tip would be I like hesitate to say pick a niche or stay in a niche, but it is like have something that you can be known for, whether that's like a topic or like a journey that's going on in your life. Like take people along on the journey. For me, you know, at the time it was paying off my car. People could like see my face come up on their feed and hopefully remember that I'm the girl that is working on paying off her car. Or yeah. You know, if you start a new journey, like right now for me, an example is the Airbnb. I'm the girl who's moving to the city and now turning her like house into an Airbnb. And there are so many videos that you can create around that. I can create, here's the supplies that I'm getting for my Airbnb. Here's the stuff that I'm getting for my apartment. Here's the legal documents I need to turn it into an Airbnb. And even if you think it's something mundane and boring, if you're taking people on the journey, record it. Like, I remember I was thinking about making a video about all the cost of the permits. And I was like, I don't even know if I should do that. And then I was like, wait, no, this is like the day in the life, the intricate detail that people want to hear. People want to share that with them. So try to like have some sort of journey. Maybe another example could be like going to the gym for the very first time, or like my first time becoming an outdoor runner, or like starting my, you know, starting to take up adult coloring for the first time, or like cleaning out my fridge. And like each video you like post different things about cleaning out your fridge. I don't know. Like it can be something so simple, but get something or like create something that people can feel invested in, you know, like create something that people, it's like the next episode of a show. You're on the edge of your seat. You're like, oh my gosh, I can't wait for the next episode to come out because I want to see what's going to happen next. Like if you kind of foster that, people will find a reason to care about you and follow you. Because in the beginning, when you're just starting out as a creator, you need to come to the humbling realization that nobody cares about you. Like, and I even at the numbers that I'm at, I still tell that to myself, that like, nobody cares about you until you give them a reason to care.
Yeah. The quote that I heard recently was like, you're at a party and some random stranger comes up and starts telling you about your day or their day. And you're like, what the, why are you talking to me about your, I don't give a shit. Yeah. It's the exact same thing with social media. Your feed is a party.
Yes.
And someone coming up to you and saying, listen about my day. Like, what the fuck do I care?
Yes. Versus if they came up to you and they said, I just paid off $30,000 of car loan. Let me tell you about my day. Then you're like, this person sounds kind of interesting. Let me see what's about their day.
Yeah. And it's like, you almost have to put off what your like big accomplishments are. Cause there's this creator that I follow and I was thinking about, why did I end up following him? Mm-hmm. And he has like 5 million followers about content creation. His name's like Jun Yoon or something. Yoon. Anyways. And he, I was like, why am I following him? In his bio, it's like biomedical engineer. I'm like, oh, that's why I followed you, because I thought that like we would have something in common. And it's just like these small little nuances that you don't know that your brain is even registering. But like, and then you start picking it apart of like, why do I follow this? Like, why am I looking at this? Why do I engage in this? It's like a whole new form of psychology that you are interpreting on yourself.
And that's actually a really good point. I am also really big into journaling. And sometimes I like to give myself journal prompts. You can just look on ChatGPT if you don't know what journal prompt to do. But like, sometimes I like to ask myself, like, why would someone follow me? And if there are reasons why someone wouldn't follow me, like, for example, if my lighting is poor or my video quality is poor and I'm finding that I wouldn't follow someone else because of those things, I kind of like to sit down and reflect on them and journal, like, what does my ideal content look like? What does my ideal storytelling look like? How can I practice those things or like level up those things so that I can get to that point where it would be someone that I would like to follow? So definitely don't be afraid to like sit with those thoughts and meditate or journal with them and like see what comes up.
Yeah, I love that. And being reflective on yourself is like definitely a humbling feeling, especially in a realm where there's people that have been doing this for years. And then there's people that you see that have been doing this for less time than you that blew up somehow. So how much of your experience on social media content creating do you feel like is actual skill and analytic review versus luck on what shows up on someone's feed?
I think a lot of it is luck, to be honest, but I think there also is an aspect of skill to it, because the people that you see coming up on your feed, they have been doing this for so long and they have really figured out a way to hook their audience. There's a skill to that. If you just sit down and you're like, get ready with me to go do groceries. Yeah, I think that, you know, maybe I should probably go start my, like, someone is scrolling on that so fast. It is a skill to get right to the point, to have no filler words, to make eye contact with your audience, to have charisma in your videos, to let your personality shine. Even if you live with other people, like, my husband is home right now. It has taken me so long to get to this point. I even still get like a little bit feeling that he can hear me talking right now or when I'm making my videos. I think it's definitely a skill, but I think it's also like, I had a really big epiphany moment the other day when this one creator that I follow, who kind of a similar situation to what you were describing, where she like blew up over the course of a year and I was jealous. First of all, jealousy is just your desires masked. So if you're feeling jealous about something, it means you really want to do something. But she posted a video that was like, here's what I made in this month. And she went over the stats of how many videos she posted. And it was 42 videos in a month. And I was like, oh, I probably like am at that level. I looked at how many videos I had posted in a month and it was 12. So that was kind of like a really big moment for me where I was like, okay, I knew directly what I can do to get to where she is. If I want to be where she's at, then I need to go through a couple months of posting that many videos before I can feel like I can compare myself to her, you know? Because you never know where someone is at with the amount of effort that they're putting into it. And it's really easy to see their videos and be like, oh, I can't believe they're blowing up right now. I can't believe they're getting all those views. Why am I not getting all those views if you're not putting in the same amount of reps that they're also putting in?
Yeah. And that's there was a video that I was watching the other day that the girl seemingly blew up and she's like, I didn't blow up. I posted 5 to 8 times per day.
Dang.
I was like, 5 to 8 times. I struggle to post once per day.
Real.
And I'm like, I don't even know where you begin to post 8 times a day. So yeah, that makes sense why she seemingly blew up. She was posting 8 times a day. And I was like, okay, there's no need for me to be jealous about that because that's a lot. She literally is doing it full time.
Oh, for sure. And then I feel like sometimes I get frustrated where, I don't know if you can relate to this or if anyone listening who's a creator can relate to this, but you know that you know what you should be doing. You know that you should be posting content. And it's a day where you're just feeling so blah, so drab. You can't pull yourself out of bed. You don't want to show your face. You don't want to have a conversation. And you put your camera up on the tripod and you're looking at your camera and you're like, I don't even know what to talk about right now. Like, what do I even make a video about? Like, I don't even know what to do. And those days, I feel like I look to ChatGPT. What can I talk about right now? I look to the people I follow. What have I recently liked? What topics were they talking about? What can I put my own spin on? And then all else fails, I make a vlog, post, you know, record a couple videos of my day in the life or of me folding laundry or of me vacuuming the house, put all of those to zero sound, put a trending audio over it and do some sort of text on screen. And sometimes it's as simple as that. And I'm like, I'm going to take the L on today, but at least I've created something and put it out for people to see.
Get the rep in. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Okay, so to wrap up the episode, I have a few rapid fire questions. Think of like the final round of, what is that? The Family Feud where you have to like, okay.
I love it.
So don't worry about trying to get them in. It's super fast, but that is the concept. Okay. So what's your best advice for women wanting to build generational wealth?
Invest early and
early and often. What are some other female finance experts you admire?
Break Your Budget, Erin Confortiti, Alex on a Budget. Those are my top three that I love following.
Okay. Cash, credit, or debit? Which do you use most?
Credit.
What's one investing myth that drives you crazy?
One investing myth. That you should trade. No, I'm all about holding for a long time. Buy something and hold.
Okay. If you want to delete all of your social media but one, which would you keep?
I feel like TikTok, but it might be going away. So then I guess Instagram.
And then final one, what are your thoughts on crypto and alternative investments?
You know, we actually just recently decided to add crypto to our portfolio. We are consistently putting $200 a month into it. And I'm going to be honest, We don't really know much about it, but we feel comfortable investing in that due to how old we are. We're 28. So, you know, we still have a lot of tolerance for risk, and it's an amount of money in our budget that we would otherwise be allocating to investments anyway. So like there is still an amount of risk that we are comfortable taking on. So I don't really know much about it, but yeah.
This isn't advice. This isn't advice, anyone.
I don't know much about it, but we're dabbling in it. And we're just going to kind of approach it in the same way that we would approach, you know, investing in the stock market, where we're just going to buy some and we're going to hold on to it and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Libby. And let everyone know where they can follow you, where they can buy your template and all of that fun stuff. Anything else you want to plug?
This was so fun. I feel like we had the most diverse conversation. So thank you for starting off my weekend right. If you want to follow me more, you can check out my TikTok and Instagram at Libby Beyond the Label.